Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book Chapter and Verse 181 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively only here on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch over at crmw.net. Please stop by crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. See for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Friday, September the 12th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a dark and stormy Friday evening, at least in the Southeast, on September the 12th, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're more than welcome to call in and participate with myself and the guests. The guests will be joining us at the bottom of this hour. The guests will come in at 9:30. I'll tell you more about the guest in just a moment. The show site, strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you can find out about the links to all of the guests who have been on the show. You can listen to any of those streams. You'll find links there to audio archives that are from past shows, as well as links to the chat room. The chat room is active this evening, and I'm there, and it's one of the ways you can participate with the show by joining us in the chat room. It's very easy to do. You just stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com, click on chat, and it'll take you right in. You just choose a chat name. It's just that easy. You'll also find links there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com for the Strictly Confidential MySpace page, and links there to help you locate the music that you're going to hear on the show and that we've played in the past. You're also going to find there a link to the Head On Radio Network main site. That is headonradionetwork.com, the most wonderful progressive internet radio station on the planet. At headonradionetwork.com, you can find out all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, and you'll find there also PayPal buttons to make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network in any way that you can. It keeps progressive radio live on the internet, conversation radio like you don't hear it anywhere else, unhurried and unrushed. And that's over at headonradionetwork.com, of which I'm only a very small part. The guest that will be joining us at the bottom of the hour, I'm looking forward to. His name is John Bisegli, and I hope I can do this by the time he joins us. I've really been practicing this. John Bisseglia. You did it. Okay, Bisseglia. Fairly sure. Anyway, he's the head of Gay Tax Protest. Now, Gay Tax Protest is a movement to withhold federal income taxes from the IRS until there are civil rights and parities for the LGBT community. A freedom to marry, for example, along with so many other things. So that'll be an interesting guest. We've not heard of someone who's been through the fray, heard from someone, at least live on the show, who's been through a situation where not having civil rights was a very, very bad thing indeed. That will be at, he'll join us about 9:30. Now, to participate, you can use 877, this is toll-free, by the way, 877, the number 4, head-on. That's toll-free. That translates to 877-443-2366, 2366, toll-free. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. And email normally arrives to myheadonradionetwork.com, but we're going to use a different email address this evening for whatever reasons. My machine and HeadOnRadioNetwork.com's email servers are not on speaking terms. So for this evening and this evening only. We'll hopefully have it corrected over the weekend. Use Peter at petergodbold.com. That's B-O-L-D, Peter at petergodbold.com. So there's so many ways you can participate. It is conversation radio, after all, via email or via chat or via toll-free, or you take care of the freight yourself. All up to you, the Head On Radio Network. Now that I've got you guys alone for a little while, oh boy, wasn't last night's guest wonderful? I really enjoyed that fellow. Coffee. What an amazing guest. But anyway, last night was an interesting evening. About 30 minutes before the show was supposed to start, I was swapping out the power supply on the computer. I've been through so many bizarre problems, things that just didn't make sense over the last couple of weeks with this machine, which has always been very, 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 very stable. And all sorts of, I could go into all the weirdness, but your mind would just numb over. We've all seen the computer weirdness. But as it turns out, it was the power supply failing. Apparently some of the voltage lines of the power supply were not regulating or falling out. And I think that all of the weirdness that I've had over the last month has been because of a slowly dying power supply. Who knew? Of course, I had an extra power supply tucked away. This is the house where power supplies, old power supplies, go to die. It's always extra power supply or widget or hard drive somewhere in the closet or me stumbling on the floor. So anyway, I think we're all good now. And I take back all the bad things I said about Vista. It turned out to be a hardware problem. What shall we talk about? I know. We'll play catch-up. That's what we'll do. We've missed a number of Just Us editions recently, and there are some stories that I do want to share with you. So this first half hour of the show is a great way to do that before John joins us. And we'll talk about a couple of stories here on our favorite organization, Focus on the Family. What are those pesky rascals doing now? Well, there's a long overdue piece of legislation that has passed both the House and the Senate in the state of Colorado, which is, of course, home to Focus on the Family. By the way, did I ever tell you the story about the time I wore a T-shirt that said Focus on Your Own Family to the grocery store here? I got so many smiles, not one frown. A lot of people were just thrilled that somebody was wearing a T-shirt that belittled the Focus people. I think more people are fed up with stuff like that than we give credit for. So in any case, this bill that has passed both the House and the Senate in Colorado is called the Expansion of Discrimination Prohibitions Bill. In other words, this bill prohibits discrimination, and the bill is being expanded. So this measure that is passed is just update current laws so that they prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity in housing practices, public accommodations, jury service, whoever even thought of that, family planning services, and the list goes on and on. Now, because everyone expected, and because Focus on the Family is based in Colorado, and everybody expected them to whine and scream and complain that the bill would trample on their religious freedom to hate, there was a special provision written into this law which specifically points out, and I quote, "Nothing in this act is intended to impede or otherwise limit the protections contained in Section 4 of Article 2 of the State Constitution concerning the free exercise and enjoyments of religious profession and worship." So the amendment clearly states that not only are you free to hate, you can enjoy it. You can do whatever the hell you want to do over it. Focus on the Family. It will not limit free exercise and enjoyment of religious profession. I know it's great fun to parade around with those ridiculous signs and talk about how we can all be cured. So you see, this bill is not against anybody, not against anybody. It is clearly designed to protect all citizens from blatant and even the little teeny tiny casual acts of discrimination that we see every day in the public sector. And it's a fair it's law, it's a decent law, and it's what any decent community would do for its citizens. Well, I think you already know what's on page two. Focus on the Family had a fit. They completely ignored what the measure would actually do, and they completely ignored what the bill actually said, which was that you're free to enjoy your hate. We'll even let you enjoy it. In no way will your free exercise be restricted whatsoever in the inclusion of the LGBT community. Notice that they also, that this bill also covered sexual orientation and gender identity. Well, so they came out with a little audio clip, runs about a minute, and they were all about making everybody scared that the new protections would harm poor, defenseless heterosexuals, and we're going to be led into a breathless state of anxiety and fright by predatory men in dresses. I'll let Bob run the clip. Now, Bob, we're running them out of order. We're going to run FOF2. So this one is Focus on the Family 2. This is their promo against the bill. Roll it, Bob.
Mom!
If the Colorado legislature has its way...
A man in a dress came into the girls' restroom at school today.
We could all be dealing with a new type of predator.
Honey, there was a man in the women's showers at the gym today, and the management said it was Colorado law.
And instead of our kids worrying about classwork, they'll be worrying about who might be in the restroom with them.
No way I'm going in there. I'd rather wait all day if a guy's in there.
Our children must be protected from predators. But if Governor Ritter won't veto Senate Bill 200, all public restrooms, including those in our public schools, will be open to anyone of any sex. Colorado's Democrat-controlled legislature has already passed this bill, but Governor Ritter still has time to veto it. Call him now and ask him to protect our kids and veto SB 200. Call 303-866-2471. 303-866-2471.
Brought to you by Focus on the Family Action and Colorado Family Action.
Now, did you hear that? How clearly she said the word. The Democrat Party? the old lizard himself, John McCain, was referring to us as the Democrat Party on the View. There was some posters in our chat room earlier posted us a link to his performance on the View. Did you hear the breathless woman? Honey, there are predatory men in dresses. Honey, predatory men in dresses are not after your children. The dingo ate your baby. Predatory men in dresses, indeed. Lord have mercy. And see, it's stuff like that that just justifies the need for the legislation to begin with. You know, you on one hand want to thank them for showing how damn prejudicial they are, and the other hand, you want to run from the room screaming. So there you have it. Focus on the Family, Adventure 1. Now we can move on to Focus on the Family, Adventure 2. Okay? Suppose you are a gay parent. Or maybe you're a straight parent, but you're for a freedom to marry and equality and all that sort of thing. Maybe you're a gay parent, maybe you're a pro-gay parent. And the question in this story, which is also playing catch-up, something we didn't get to recently, who do you want deciding what your children should be watching on television? Do you want an organization that works day and night to deny gays the rights to love the people they want to love? Focus on the Family. And do you want that organization to choose what your children watch? Do you want them to assist with all programming decisions? How about a group that thinks gays can change and supports and funds a program that tries to do exactly that, Focus on the Family? And what about an organization that considers gay marriage to be the very antithesis, I tell you, of all that is good and all that is right in the world, Focus on the Family? What would that be like? Well, there is a partnership deal between, hang on to your hat, honey, TiVo, yes, the digital telephone or television recording technology. TiVo, time shifting in a whole new way. There is a new partnership between TiVo's KidZone service and, oh my God, Run From The Room, screaming focus on the family. So now you can have in one handy organization that meets the description of everything we just talked about. Controlling what is appropriate for your children and controlling the images that they see on television. So Focus on the Family is teaming with TiVo. Now, of course, if you don't know, TiVo is a very, very popular digital video recorder. And to protect children from harmful television programming, the ministry, Focus on the Family, is dedicated to meeting the needs of parents, boldface lie, and that includes helping them make wise media choices. So TiVo launched KidZone in March of 2006 at the request of parents who were fed up with harmful programming. Now, KidZone children can only watch, hang on to your hat, pre-approved shows. Not by you, mommy and dad. Not by a group of your peers. And certainly not by gay and pro-gay parents. They're pre-approved by Focus on the Family. You can't make this stuff up. Joe Miller, who is a senior vice president of TiVo, said, KidZone is a big hit because it ensures there's always something good on TV. And TiVo allows you not just to block stuff, but to find good stuff. And that's one of the things we're working on with Focus on the Family. Now, Focus on the Family, of course, has their own, I guess you could call it news service. It's called Family News. Imagine that. And on Family News, they say, how do we identify what programs are good, and how can we give parents tools to not only block the bad stuff, but find the good stuff? Well, I can tell you right now that on the TiVo, Focus on the Family's TiVo, you're not going to see, and I love the way this is put, Dora the Explorer learns about tolerance. You're not going to see Dora the Explorer learns about tolerance. No, you're going to see something more along the lines of Dora the Explorer learns about the agenda being used to corrupt her mind. Yes, cherry-picked programming to warp your children and turn them into Christian bots with no resemblance at all to the round-skinned carpenter, but total dedication to the right-wing fundamentalists who are so breathlessly endorsing Palin. Boy, we had a great little chat about Palin last night. So we know that Focus on the Family is extremely anti-gay and that they are supposedly pro-family. They seem to think those are two different things. And they've teamed with digital recording. And this is the digital recorder in the market, as best as I can tell, TiVo. And we've also learned that Focus on the Family is just one of several groups that got involved with this particular project, which means mind control of your children when they're just little tiny babies. Then, all of a sudden, here comes from the Focus on the Family website a wonderful new promotion. It's called Put in a Good Word for Dad. Enter the I Know a Super Dad essay contest. This is for the children. This is also has the TiVo logo on it, and it's one of the approved commercials that your children get to see. Not that there's anything particularly wrong with wanting to point out that your dad is a super dad. It says, this month, as we take time to honor fathers, we have a question for you. Do you know a super dad? I can assure you that super dad does not exist in the LGBT family. That could not possibly be a super dad. Perhaps he can't leap tall buildings in a single bond, but at some point, he's demonstrated exactly what a dad should be in your mind, straight. Maybe he taught you to drive. Maybe he's bailed you out a tight spot. Maybe he's wonderful, and he's a wonderful father to you.
you know, could have been rewritten. Maybe he's fabulous. But no, 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 no. Whatever the story is, we want to hear it. Doubt that. So in any case, you you enter online and you get to write. And this happened a little while back. There's a list of the winners. And, you know, it's harmless. The kids get to talk about their dad, and somebody wins a prize, probably a TiVo. Or the nails from Jesus' cross, as that left over from the movie. I think we all know what that one is. So in any case, here's a group that fights day and night against gay fathers and gay parents and lesbian parents and pro-gay heterosexual parents. And they're teaming up with a national brand on a contest to honor fathers. So, in effect, TiVo is slithering up next to a group that promotes mean-spirited discrimination against the entire population of LGBT individuals. And the vast majority of the entries, of course, that go into SuperDad are going to be from well-intentioned kids who want nothing more to honor their mom or their dad, the dad specifically in this case. But all the women can be fathers, too, but that's a whole other subject. It's not going to change the fact that this organization that's fueling the whole thing is working to keep a world where queer fathers and sons are less equal. Here's Bob, this is FOF2, Focus on the Family. No, FOF1. FOF1 is the promo announcing the Focus on the Family TiVo ad. Just check it out. Roll it, Bob. Focus on the Family 1.
Somewhere right now, a dad is saving his kids from a spider.
Daddy!
Do you know a super dad? He might not wear a cape, but he certainly fits your definition of a hero. In 100 words or less, tell us about the super dad you know. Every Friday through the month of June, Focus on the Family and TiVo are giving away 2 TiVo DVR boxes with service for the best stories. Register today at FocusOnTheFamily.com. That's FocusOnTheFamily.com.
But let's not pass that law in California because it could harm the heterosexual parents. Total disconnect, a complete disavowalment, and a complete lack of respect for the LGBT community with children. Came across some numbers today. The numbers of LGBT lesbian families and male families with children is staggering. 30 to 40% of the gay population, the LGBT population. So they want to see discrimination embodied in the Constitution, while at the same time, they're controlling your television's programming for the Kids Zone. Now, the Kids Zone has been recognized by many organizations as a great way to protect children from mature programming. But their focus on the family is leveraging the benefits of Kids Zone, leveraging it to their own purposes. And really, what is the excuse? How could TiVo possibly, if they're going to allow Focus on the Family to run joint advertising and use TiVo's logo and symbol in their ad campaigns, and then completely ignoring the history that Focus on the Family has, which is its financial empire is the money was all raised in the backs of LGBT folks. So it is a bizarre pairing, and over at Joe, my God, points out it may not be the first time that TiVo's gotten in bed with Focus on the Family. Apparently, he contacted the media person over at TiVo, and she was completely unaware of the program. She said, or the promotion, rather. She said she's unable to speak for TiVo on this issue, but she has promised to investigate and get back to me, meaning Joe, with a statement. So stand by, he says, it's entirely possible that Focus on the Family has launched this contest without TiVo's knowledge, oh, wouldn't that be delicious, or without their permission, and use TiVo's logo without permission. Ah, but alas, there was another conversation with TiVo, and they have emailed Joe the following. TiVo's popular Kid Zone feature has been recognized by many organizations as a great way to protect children from mature programs. Focus on the Family is one such organization that is leveraging the benefits of Kid Zone for an affiliate promotion of their own design, in this case, a Father's Day contest. So on the telephone, the representative stressed that TiVo has supported various LGBT groups in the past, and that this promotion is just one of the many highlights that the Kids Zone features. And so there is apparently a relationship between TiVo and Focus on the Family. Even if Focus on the Family designed the contest all on their own, there is still a relationship. So the Family Equality Council is not particularly happy about that. Her name is Jennifer Chrysler. She's the executive director of Family Equality Council. It's the country's national organization that's working to ensure equality for lesbians and gays and bisexuals and transgendered and the whole rainbow by building communities and changing hearts and minds. So in any case, she writes to them, on behalf of LGBT families everywhere, I am incredibly disappointed to see that TiVo, which is a national corporation, is providing entertainment services to millions of families in this country, has decided to sponsor and endorse the I Know a Super Dad contest with Focus on the Family. She points out that Focus on the Family is widely known as the largest right-wing organization in the United States. Probably should have said one of. And she says, people for the American Way remind us in particular that Focus on the Family works against special rights, whatever the hell that is, for homosexuals, and works against hate crime legislation, and supports reparative therapy, as if, for homosexuals, which has been, of course, discredited and rejected by the vast majority of doctors and physicians. In other words, witchcraft voodoo programming for your little John and your little Mary. So, Focus on the Family, she points out, routinely makes false claims about gays and lesbian parents. In the 2004 book, Marriage Under Fire, Dobson wrote that more than 10,000 studies support mom-dad families as the best for children. 10,000 studies, is that a fact? An assertion that is now completely debunked by both Dobson's lack of citations and the fact that LGBT families can show 30 years of scientifically valid research demonstrating that our children do just as well as children raised by heterosexual parents in all of the key area, repeat that, all of the key areas of childhood development. And she points out that Dobson has made outrageous statements and doesn't always tell the complete truth. And has also said that marriage between daddies and that could cause marriage between daddies and little girls, like a little girl and a man. That's what it would cause, or a man and a donkey. And it will also cause the destruction of the family and the entire Western civilization, entirely, all of it, every bit of it. So there you have it. And that little story was out, about a month or so ago, but we haven't had a chance to get to it. But I just had to tell you the Focus on the Family TiVo story. And there's more fun facts to know and tell. There always are. But it's time to talk about our guest. I'm looking forward to our guest this evening. Now, guest this evening, his name is John. Now, I'm going to ask him when we get him on. He's on hold with us. His name is John DeSeglia. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. We'll check with him. And John is with the organization Gay Tax Protest. And interestingly enough, as you all know who regularly listen to this program, we love it when we have music guests in the show. We had one last night, and we have so many accomplished musicians. Now, just as a, by the way, John has worked as a pianist and electric bassist since 1979. He's taught piano and bass guitar for over 20 years. He considers teaching young children music through the piano to be an awesome privilege and a joy. Played in various jazz orchestras and ensembles. He began representing a one-man show, Wild About Rhythm, in 2002 at local elementary schools. He is a teacher, and he owned and operated a piano studio from his home in Kirkland, which is part of his story. John says, I used to be a self-supporting, tax-paying, and contributing member of society. In 2003, I had to leave my marriage and home of almost 8 years. Unfortunately, my business was also a part of that home for 7 years, and when he left, he found out he had a staggering lack of civil rights when he had to flee his home. And he had to flee that home not as a legal spouse, but as a complete stranger in the eyes of the law. John writes to the IRS, "Dear IRS agents, you are complete idiots if you think unequal civil rights justifies equal taxes. What's so hard to understand about that?" John, welcome to Strictly Confidential. Good evening to you, sir.
Oh, there.
Hi. I'm delighted to have you with us this evening. Can you hear me okay, John?
I can hear you fine, although while I was on hold, I had to sit through you discussing some of James Dobson's ideas, which was a little difficult.
Yeah, it's sometimes a difficult set to listen through. We often go into the Dobsons and the American Family Association. We call it the cesspool.
It's a little cruel to be on hold and have to hear that. But
yeah, it was cruel. I really shouldn't have done that to you. You know, John, I'm thrilled to have you here. We've had so many guests, but none who has come to us from the perspective of actually having been through a very bad situation and experienced personally the discrimination that the lack of over 1,000 laws that having a marriage license. John, can you tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to writing that wonderful note to the IRS?
Oh, well, it was pretty, you know, it's an easy place to be where I'm at right now. It wasn't hard to get here considering what I've been through. I was at the height of my career. I was teaching. I had my studio up and running about 7 years by then, 7.5 years. Was getting kind of known in the whole piano teaching world. It's a very small but well-known world. And I was working on a book deal with Hal Leonard Publishing, which is one of the bigger publishers of piano music, especially for young children. And, you know, everything was going well, but except my marriage. It was not going well, and I was in a relationship I consider not physically abusive, but there was verbal abuse, there was control. It shouldn't really be a surprise. My ex was he was the financial supervisor for a city here on the east side. So he wrote checks for many policemen and firemen, and, you know, I think he was pretty much used to controlling the money, and I just, you know, it was probably my naivete, but I kind of entered his home and moved in with him and kind of just left it that way. And it was strange because money was never an issue during our relationship, but it wasn't until we ended it that I realized just how much money meant to my ex, because it was the kind of thing that represents power and control and love and all those things. And so when I tried to claim my half of a joint stock portfolio, my life was threatened, basically. And he wanted that money, and he wanted me out of the house, and everything happened just in a heartbeat. I mean, I made a lot of decisions under duress, because basically I remember him saying that he wanted me out, not like with a time limit, but, you know, I felt like I had to get out immediately, which I did. I found somebody to take over my piano payments immediately. I went out Friday. I remember it was the Friday. Looked all over Seattle for a place to live and moved in the next day. Saturday, you know, a lot happened just very fast, and the truth is, I was terrified. There was about a week and a half, I was afraid walking at night when I'd see headlights behind me, because, you know, I was afraid that he actually threatened me using his sons, which was kind of creepy, and, you know,
very creepy.
Known to be violent and an alcoholic and had a criminal record, and I just, you know, it was a threat that I took very seriously.
Well, certainly, as someone that craves power that much, when you consider they write checks to the police and the fire department, too, that's also got to be a bit of concern.
Well, yeah, it was strange because I really didn't realize, you know, and I don't want to dog a lot about my ex. I mean, I'm not here to dog him. I mean, I think anybody in that situation who has the power, being human and greedy, may be tempted to, you know, abuse that privilege. I think this is where we have marriage rights, is so that people can have justifiable breakups in the eyes of the law and legal and just separations, and not have one party who may have more social or political or financial power to basically walk all over the other person.
I agree, and just one more point about that. We don't need to focus on it, but you also lost your business as a result of your having to leave your home immediately.
It was very much a domino effect, and this is where it gets kind of difficult, because, I mean, the details are just, you know, they could bore you to tears, and there's a lot of details. But the first thing that happened was I could not, at the time I needed to move, I just came back from the World Piano Pedagogy Conference. I spent a ton of money on this conference. I was going to work with this publisher and was at a moment where I think I had $500 or $600 in the bank. It wasn't a lot of money. Definitely not enough money to move a grand piano and store and at the same time find a place to live and move myself. And I had to make a decision between finding a place to live or finding a place for my piano. And I couldn't afford a place where I could actually have the grand piano and play it and, you know, teach out of. I couldn't afford that kind of place. So it was a really hard decision, and I basically gave up my piano to someone who was interested in taking over the payments. And I didn't even realize how much that would affect me. I've had a piano since birth. I've always had access to a piano, or now in my adult life, you know, purchasing and spending about, you know, 10, 12 years paying for one. And so I didn't even realize myself how that was like having to sever my own arm with my other arm. I mean, that was about the emotional impact of it. And without that and I had some trouble starting up a business at this guitar studio, which wasn't, I was kind of like moving my studio around, even to the point where parents were picking, they loved me. I mean, they wanted to stay with me. So they were picking me up and driving me home to home. But that just made me feel more disconnected and kind of almost intensified the feeling of loss, because I would go into these people's houses where they had beautiful grand pianos, and I'm teaching their five-year-old on this piano, and I'm almost in tears because, you know, I'm missing mine. So it was a domino effect. I had trouble preparing for performances. I mean, it's very hard to be a piano teacher and a piano performer, a church musician, without a piano. I think that's kind of logical. And so it was more and more difficult to prepare for performances, and I was starting to have trouble just making them and having panic attacks and a lot of things related to what I've discovered is considered post-traumatic stress disorder. But at the time it was happening, I didn't know that was it. I just thought I lost my piano, and I felt really, really horrible about it. I didn't realize that, you know, there was a lot more going on than that.
It seems to me that there was an intent to destroy you completely, is what I'm hearing here.
Well, you know, I think there were some things definitely that were made to dehumanize me. I mean, one particular moment I remember where I was asked for the key ring that held my key. We're talking about those little tiny metal things, because I think I originally had it for the set of the cards, but it was that kind of thing. And I remember an old blanket bedspread that had holes in it that he was asking back, that I kind of had for a few years on, you know, my futon, just thinking, well, you know, he's got five sets, he doesn't need these, or we had five sets, you know. and I found out at the end that it was definitely, I think he was intent on making sure I left with absolutely nothing. And, I think there was some mean-spiritedness, but again, yeah, I'm all for not really focusing on that.
Yeah. So you must have quickly then that in the eyes of the law, you were a complete stranger to this man. How did that happen?
This was the frustrating thing, because I went to Seattle Protective Services, and because it was a death threat over the joint stock portfolio, they were saying pretty much that as long as you do what he says, he has no reason, the threat would be gone, which kind of made sense, and it really was. That was the main thing. We were fighting over money. My life was threatened over money. And so it was a decision, which this is not unusual. I mean, I've heard, you know, there's been many stories of women, especially with physical abusive husbands or mentally abusive, emotionally abusive, who leave and decide to basically leave with nothing just for their sanity and safety. And it was kind of that situation. I could have fought it, because it was in both of our names, but I wasn't willing to risk my life and my mental well-being, which was eroding by the minute by that point. So I just decided to sign it off and walk away from it. And even at the moment in the bank, the guy who was doing it, the notary, asked me, he said, "Do you want me to call the police?" Because he could tell I was doing it under duress, and by law, they're not supposed to allow that. But I almost begged him, just said, "Look, I just want this to be done. This has to be done now, because, you know, I can't live in fear." And it's just a lot of ugliness, a lot of very unnecessary things. I mean, what I stress on my blog, I try to stress, is the details are irrelevant in the big picture. I think we all of us need to share our story so that people put a human face and some of the details that happen without marriage equality, so people can understand the difficulties. And they're as wide-ranging and varied as you can believe. But all those details really don't matter, because we're just talking about equality. It shouldn't matter, you know, what this happened or that happened, because then people start to think, well, then you could have prevented this, or as McCain said, you know, well, you got legal avenues to buy this right and buy this right and buy this right. And to me, it's like we're both going to the same store, and yet homosexuals are charged more for the same rights, if they can even buy all the same rights. And to me, that's just outright immoral, criminal, really.
Well, I have to agree.
Excuse me?
I was going to say, John, I should let you know that we are posting, you mentioned your blog, we are posting a link to your blog in the chat room, but for those of you who are listening who are not in the chat room, you can find that at gaytaxprotest.blogspot.com. Again, that's gaytaxprotest.blogspot.com. And I understand that I have the name is pronounced Bishalia, right?
Bishalia.
Bishalia. I see. Interesting name.
Bish, kind of like fish. Bish, and then a long A, and then Leah. Bishalia.
Interesting.
It's Italian. I've lived my whole... I'm 43 tomorrow. Happy birthday for me.
Happy birthday to you.
Only once in my life has my name, last name been pronounced correctly, and it was in an Italian class at the University of Michigan. So I'm used to it being said with a hard G.
I see. Well, when faced with these, how did you handle it? I mean, you mentioned a post-traumatic stress disorder. I can see where that would happen. How did that affect you, and what steps did you take? I mean, you had to get your life back. It's like your life was completely gone. You had no legal standing. You had to sign away everything. Yet a heterosexual couple would never have to face anything like that. They don't have a clue.
Yeah, and this is what kills me when I talk to some people, heterosexuals who are divorced, and they're like, oh, yeah, I got divorced. Oh, I got screwed in the deal. And I just want to say, look, whatever you think screwed or not screwed is, it, at least it's nothing compared to what you go through when you have no legal standing whatsoever. There's a huge difference. Divorce, and you know, divorces aren't meant to. I know, you know, if I would have had a legal divorce, I wouldn't have left with everything I had, but I definitely would have left with more than nothing. And he wouldn't have left with all he had and, you know, the financial situation that he was in. He was doing great. He had a great job, you know. We were doing very well as a couple.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate thing. There are so many benefits of marriage. Often hospital visitation is mentioned, but so many other things. For instance, elderly care facilities. Generally, the couple is not separated. You have to, and the law presumes a married couple, jointly owns the home and property. There's so many things that are granted with the stroke of a pen. How did this move to withholding income taxes, which I think is fabulous, by the way? This is a great progression. I love to hear this story.
To me, it was a pretty logical step. I mean, ever since I saw, I've always been kind of, you know, mildly politically, socially minded. And after seeing a movie, especially like The Corporation, I don't know if you saw that movie or read the book, but it makes connection between, you know, corporate life and what they're doing and basically calls them all psychopaths. But it also addresses the issue of the dollar. And this happened when I was kind of in Michigan. I just became hyper aware that every time I spent money, it supported something. It went to somewhere, and I started thinking, I want to support more of the local businesses in town, the mom-and-pop operation, more than Kroger, let's say. I want to buy, you know, a cereal that's made kind of with whole food and natural as opposed to some corporate, you know, monster that's out there doing something that I find even unethical. I mean, we could look at, like, the fast food industry, for example. And it became that with government, once you learn that, you know, over half the money goes towards the military, either past, future, or present spending needs, and you see babies, dead Iraq babies laying around, you know, people are just, there's such a disconnect. People aren't realizing when they pay their taxes. I wish they could see the dead bodies piled up at their feet. I think more people, just for the Iraq war alone, would think seriously about withholding tax. And this is the tricky thing, because some people think, oh, he just doesn't want to pay taxes. He's finding a million reasons to, and I even had this on my blog, because it's hard not to ignore what's been going on the past 7.5 years. And that alone is a whole other issue, but I feel pretty passionately about both, although because marriage inequality has affected my life so much, this is where I'm focusing my energy. To me, it's just a natural progression. If you're paying taxes to this government, you're sanctioning the discrimination that you're receiving. You're basically saying this is okay, and I can't say that anymore. And unfortunately, in the gay community, we are so diverse. We've got a lot of wealthy gays who you know, these marriage inequality, you know, situation will rarely affect them because they have so much power and control. It often hurts the, you know, people who are financially disadvantaged, especially. You got a lot of people in the gay community who could care less about marriage. They want to be single and have that kind of lifestyle, and that's all fine. It just kills me that people in the gay community as a whole, whether they want marriage for themselves or not, I think we should be for the right to at least have the option of marriage. You know, regardless of if you want to do it yourself, I think it's just a basic civil right. You asked how I got this tax protest.
Just along the lines that you were just speaking of, before we head to the tax protest, I'm sorry I've interjected this, but you made a wonderful statement in the reading material I've looked through today, and that is you point out not only that you didn't have any rights and that you were a legal stranger, but you point out, and I love this, I've never heard anyone say this before, that everything that happened to you would be a crime. They would have been criminal offenses if you had had a civil marriage.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, which makes this lack of marriage equality criminal to me. It is immoral, and I love the term immoral. I used to, I think all of us, we kind of cringe when we hear abomination and immoral and all that. I have a friend, Michael. I just had a brilliant sign. We did a protest at the time, and he made a sign with the flames coming up like from hell, and it said, discrimination is an abomination. And it looked just like the kind of posters that the Christian right does. And even people driving by were doing double takes, because at first they thought, oh, God, the wingnut, you know, religious guys are here. But it's nice to take back words, kind of like when we took back the word queer, or, you know, any group that kind of takes the word and realizes, you know what, Christians don't have the monopoly on spirituality or Christ. I'm talking about really the Christian right, because there is the Christian left who, although they're extremely silent, they are for marriage equality, but they're not speaking as loud as the Christian right. So that's another problem.
Taking back the word abomination, great idea. That's a new concept. I hadn't thought of that.
And everybody's saying we're immoral. You know what? I see a lot of immoral things going around. I mean, that woman who put her baby in a microwave, I think maybe our country should be more concerned about, you know, domestic abuse, and maybe considering that a very much an immoral thing going on. Me and another guy holding hands and kissing in the privacy of our own home, or in public for that matter, is not an issue to society. It should not be, you know, a threat to society. There are much, you know, greater threats.
Yes, I agree. An interesting aspect of that whole thing is for so many years, the Christian right has said it goes against nature. It's against nature, goes against nature. It's not right, goes against nature. And so then when the fact that homosexuality exists throughout the animal kingdom, and it's well documented in many species, and in other species it's been observed but not necessarily well documented, but it's as common as everyday grass or as common as rice with a meal. Then they changed it from it goes against nature to, now that it has been demonstrated to be nature, it changed to you're just following your animal instincts. You can't win with the people. There's no possible
way. Well, I think one of the first things I said on my, I'll click it up right here, my All Are Equal, the very first post, and I'm bad about this stuff. It's from the Bill of Rights. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Okay, people can Google, like I said, if they want information, they can find out. But this is a historic U.S. document, and it talks about things like unalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. It also mentions enjoying and defending their lives and liberties, that of acquiring, possessing, and protecting property. I find that very interesting because that's kind of related to marriage and, you know, protecting property. But the line I like saying is, can we grow up and stop obsessing about genitalia long enough, genitalia long enough to acknowledge the two souls behind the naughty bits? I mean, it gets down to marriage is a union of two souls. And the fact that we're so freaked out about a penis touching another penis, oh, my God, you know, and this doesn't even address the intersex, you know, people out there. I was fortunate to meet in Seattle an intersex person, and I was astounded to find out that this person could not get married simply because a sex could not be determined or established, either male or female, that the government says, well, then you'd have no right to marry. Now, I saw a beautiful, loving human being in front of me, and the fact that the government, just because we can't check the box male or female, you get in the other box, which means denied, that is immoral to me. And it shows just how silly it is when we start worrying about genitalia. I mean, when they start going in about the horses and dogs are going to you know, have to protect their hind ends. you know, plural marriages and all that. It's like, no, marriage is a union of two souls, period, and the rights and responsibilities. But, I mean, it's pretty simple if you can look beyond the, you know, the sexuality. I hate the word homosexual. I refer to myself as homo-loving because I feel like I was have the orientation from God or whatever divine source, because I kind of have beliefs along those lines in a very kind of non-denominational way. But I feel like I was given the orientation to fall in love with my same gender. Now, sex is an expression of that love, but to just limit it, and this is very limited thinking from the right, to just limit it to pure sexuality is a real, it's an insult to human beings, to humans, yeah. You know, spiritual nature.
Well, I have to completely agree with you, and gay loving is a great term. I've also heard the term, back in the day, I heard the term homo-emotional also, and it really does feed right into the marriage between two souls, but it's impossible for them to get past the sex. They just are obsessed with sex. They say we're obsessed with sex. My stars,
I know.
Can't leave it alone.
Well, I mean, look at the billboards and look, I mean, granted, you know, the male gender has its own issues with sexuality, but I wouldn't put all the blame on just the gays. I mean, look at straight men, they've got their own issues, you know, look at our advertising. I mean, if we had naked boys in bikinis and whatever prancing around as much as, or these late, this drives me nuts at night when I'm watching at night, and basically pornography comes on with this call 9-1 whatever. For a
date.
Oh, yes. These women, and I'm like, this is disgusting. I mean, I'm surprised straight women aren't calling up going, you know what, this is like pornography, this is gross. I don't
well,
want
you to think, yes, that the Christian right would object to that, but you never hear a word about that. And children say that, too.
And as far as, I mean, like that, I like saying homo-loving. I find it interesting when I have conversations, if I refer to heterosexuals as heterosexuals all the time, they find it annoying. Which I think is neat. They get to kind of know what it feels like to live as a gay person for a day.
Yeah. And so you moved from this, you know. Well, let's talk about this. You mentioned that you, of course, your music career that you had played in many weddings. In addition to your professional career and your teaching, you also played, groups. It must be very nice weddings to have a piano if it's outdoors. But I take it then that
well, this outdoor wedding, how did that affect? I was playing in a band. But, I mean, I started playing organ at the Catholic church I went to as a child when I was, like, in fourth and fifth grade. By eighth grade, they were paying me to be their main organist, and I did play, I think, a wedding or two and even a funeral, which is pretty intense for a 13-year-old. And then throughout my life, I played, I mean, literally every friend I have, my wedding gift was playing the music, you know. It wasn't just to get out of, you know, buying them something. It was really, truly a heartfelt gift to them as a friend. But then as the years went on, it was kind of like, well, gee, don't I get to play too? I mean, you know, play this wedding game. It was just kind of feeling, talk about back of the bus when you're seeing all your friends get married and, of course, and then playing in a band. I played in wedding bands. And this is where I did hundreds of receptions. I mean, in Michigan, oh my gosh, around the Detroit, Toledo, Ann Arbor area, just so many wedding receptions that, you know, I played. And it's very strange to have been a part of so many weddings. And, you know, as a pianist, you're an integral part of the ceremony. I mean, you're helping the bride and groom choose, you know, prelude music, the postlude, recession. I mean, just every aspect of it, the whole tenor of the ceremony, you're kind of helping out as a musician. And that's a very spiritual part of it. It's not just background music, right? And in some cases, Amen. Very much a religious ceremony. And so it just felt more and more icky and strange. And that's why I said in my blog, I mean, the irony is literally killing me. And I probably will never play a wedding again, unless it's the same-sex wedding, because I don't want to sit back of the bus while I play. Now, receptions are a little different because it's kind of like a party. Yeah, I have to deal with the whole father-daughter dance and the, you know, the throwing of the bouquet. But for some reason,
the
guitar,
Excuse me? Well, I was impressed by that. The what you had to say about being in the back of the bus, or why is that heterosexual couple special that they can get up there and do that, but I can't. I haven't seen nearly as many weddings as you have, but I've been to a few, and I began to become highly resentful. When going to a wedding, and you don't want to feel that way at a wedding, but it's like in your face, you know, back of the bus.
Yeah, and this is, I like using the term the spiritual arrogance, actually as a noun and a verb, because I think it is an adjective. It's just arrogant to think my God is better than your God, my love is holier, more sacred, more beautiful, you know, deserving of God's blessings than your love. That's arrogance. And it's spiritual arrogance. It's looking at different souls and thinking, well, we're just better than. And, yeah, I don't play that anymore. I am so fed up with this. And despite the fact that legal scholars say it's going to take 30 years for marriage equality to play out in the States, and there's going to be this patchwork, just like with slavery and, you know, with women's rights and all that, I think in 2008 we should be a little smarter. I can't believe that it's going to take that long to change hearts and minds. I mean, things have changed kind of rapidly recently. I mean, look at Ellen getting married. That's huge PR in some ways. But I just refuse to sit around and wait for other people who I think half the time are immoral to vote on whether I deserve the same rights as they have. It's just mind-blowing. And I'm kind of annoyed and get angry at times that more people aren't as annoyed and angry as I am. I mean, look at all the mothers and fathers that have gay sons and daughters who just kind of accepted that they'll never get married. They should be speaking up. Our daughters, our grandmothers, I mean, I talk about this in my blog, too. We are so interconnected. I mean, there are gay grandfathers and mothers and daughters and grandchildren and all that, and I just can't believe that more family members aren't standing up. I mean, it's great what happened in, I think it was New York, was it Governor Patterson that has a lesbian daughter?
Yes.
I may be getting this mixed up, but some New York politician.
I don't recall the last name. It may be Patterson, but definitely it's New York.
I think he's the blind governor of New York, and his daughter's a lesbian, and she came out recently.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. That was great to have him kind of stand up and go, wow, I'm not just speaking out for equality, but my daughter's part of this issue. We just have to come out. As Americans, the gay Americans, lesbian, intersex, whatever, we have to come out because it is very easy to discriminate against people who are invisible. It's like the boogeyman. They don't exist. But when you find out that they're your pastor, your second grade teacher, your neighbor, your grandmother, then suddenly it's not the boogeyman, it's family.
Yes, I completely agree. No, none of us who have taken a breath of fresh air outside the closet door have any intention of going back. That's no longer an option. And I really feel like since we have stepped out, there's really no rational argument to keep us down, so to speak. Just the fact that we're out, we automatically win. It may take years and years and years, but there's no way for them to win this argument. It's irrational.
Yeah, and I'm being more out in my own life. And it's interesting that the Christian right, I hear people say all the time, you know, well, you can be okay, and sure, God, you know, loves the sinner, hates the sin, all that crap. But they don't want to see it. And I look around and I see straight people holding hands, kissing, and sometimes doing what I consider just offensive, gross, icky stuff in public. But I think any gender combination would make me feel that way. And they're not going to harass me for holding my partner's hand. I feel like being out in some areas, especially depending on where you're out, is almost a form of social aggression in this country because it is saying, you know, kind of that we're here, we're queer, get used to it, kind of deal with it. You know, I see people who, if I'm holding hands with my partner, they literally want to take their children the other way because they don't want to have to discuss with their child. Gee, what's that?
Interesting that they see it as aggression. I get that now.
And I hear dads even say stuff. I don't want to have to explain to my child two guys. You know, it's the ick factor. Half the time, the ick factor is about two gay men. Society's not grossing out about two women. It's all about the two men and the ick and the straight men who just, I mean, look at the hate crimes. They're not just punching a guy. They're beating his head until it's flat and cutting his eyes out. I mean, I'm being really graphic here, but I mean, there are hate crimes. I played a funeral, actually, for someone who I found out was burned alive in his car. I don't know if there's a hate crime, but, oh, it really sounded like one, a gay man. And it just made me think even more that, you know, this is an ugly hate. This fear and hate that drives people to attack us is, it's scary, but I think we need to be aware of it. I think if you're an out person in a big city and you don't have some kind of weapon, be it mace or something, to defend yourself, I think you're kind of foolish because that element does exist out there. I'm not saying start fights, but, you know, don't be as someone who wants to be out, that's kind of in the back of my mind. I mean, I'm walking hand in hand feeling in love, but in the back of my head, I realize that somebody could be running up from behind with a baseball bat. Straight people don't have that concern. They have no idea what it's like to live as a gay person in this world, or especially in this country. And, of course, things could be worse. I mean, you know, America, yeah, it's great that we're not being killed as much as we are in other countries. But I don't know if that's something I want to be really thankful for. I guess I am thankful for it, but, I mean, you know, it could be better in this country.
These are things we talk about often on this show. We talk about what's going on with in Iran and Iraq with, the beating to death. It's horrifying there. And even in Jamaica, there's a lot of really nasty stuff going on even. It never ceases to amaze me where it rears up. But in the United States, if the truth were known, it happens every day. And that was very disturbing to me about someone being burned in their car. That's a particularly horrifying one. But it's getting hard to take, John. It's getting hard to take this stuff.
Yeah, and again, it's that closet and shame. And on the blog, I know I did some posts where I talk about the gay divorce welfare program, which is basically, I'm not the only one. I am sure there are many, many, many other people in long-term relationships where one partner gets screwed, possibly to the point of losing everything or ending up on welfare. But I'm sure that many, many, because of things like the closet and shame and family and church, you know, don't share the reasons. But I am certain I'm not the first homosexual to end up on welfare because of a ugly divorce.
Yes, I'm sure you're not. There was a story we did recently about an elderly gay couple, and they made it to the point that one of the partners died, and they shared a home together. They had for 40, 50 years, a long-term, long-time couple. And the man who died, his family stepped in and took everything. So it even applies in a non-divorce situation. No matter where you turn, even if you don't have a problem with your partner, you can still lose everything. It's so unfair in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean, we are fighting against our families, too, and, you know, our neighborhoods because of the way people feel. I mean, did you see the movie Tying the Knot?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, about that rancher, 30 years with his partner, and then suddenly his beloved partner dies. They raise a son together, and his family, the other guy's family, comes in and basically tries to charge back rent for 30 years, and he loses the house that he built himself.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing about marriage equality and the things that happen. And again, my story has some horrific details. If you look at the movies Freeheld and Tying the Knot, there's a potpourri of horrible things that have happened out there, and I think people need to know those details. And what's striking is that they're so cruel. I mean, for a woman to give birth and her partner can't come in after a cesarean to see the baby or her, she's denied visiting. Most heterosexuals, it would be a bloodbath if that happened. Mm-hmm. It'd be like, oh, no, you're not going to prevent me from seeing my wife who just gave birth to my child. And yet, as gay people, we're just expected to kind of bend over and toe the line and just kind of submissively agree. And, you know, I hope the newer generations have what I feel in my heart, which is like, no, I'm not playing that anymore. I know I have some human rights, and I'm going to take them. And the thing about tax protests, whether it's war tax protests, gay tax protests, what have you, is it's an opportunity for citizens to take their power. It's about the only power we have. Every time we spend a dollar, that is power. And if you're giving that power to the government, then you better be, you know, approving or sanctioning a lot of what they're doing. Otherwise, you're sanctioning that with your money. A thing I think that I haven't seen in the mainstream media, it's my blog or my post on Big Money Homos, is that for the first time, I think, in human history, we have a minority that, in some cases, some of gays and lesbians have incredible wealth. There are gays in incredible positions of power, politically, socially, in business. Women did not have this when they were fighting for rights. I mean, there were maybe a few women in power, but not enough to raise a stink to get noticed. Same thing with African Americans. I mean, they didn't have necessarily, you know, again, maybe a few isolated cases, but not as a community. Our community, I mean, look at Rosie O'Donnell and David Geffen. If they just decided to stop paying taxes, oh, my God, the government would wake up and pay attention.
Well,
and I don't know why that's not happening, because we have an opportunity here to actually, I mean, the sad truth is money talks. It's unfortunate, and this has bugged me in my own story. I've shared the whole story about marriage equality, and what I get from a lot of people is a mild interest or even disinterest about equal rights, civil rights. But the second I mention withholding taxes, wow, people wake up and pay attention, because then it affects their pocketbook. Now, that's kind of, I know that sounds cynical. I hear it coming out of my mouth, and it sounds very cynical. But the truth is, a lot of people are like, yeah, equality sounds like a good idea, but if they knew that every gay person was withholding taxes, wow, equality would be the number one issue. more than pigs and lipsticks, you know, lately.
Yeah, great point. Great point. So this came to the point where there was a press release. What was it? Reuters News did a press release?
Well, it was through e-releases. I had a press release August 6th that basically, I think it started with the line, I've had enough. I've had it. And I talk about you know, a little bit of what happened to me. I wanted to mention other people's stories because, again, it's not, you know, I really want the information to get out there. I don't want anybody to obsess about any one person's story because, you know, first of all, I don't think people should have to go through their life, especially tragic situations, and have to defend every decision they made, especially if they were under duress. But also, the details shouldn't matter. I mean, horrible stuff happens to people because of this legal inequity. And that's the issue, is the legal inequity.
Well, I completely agree. What happened after the press release? Was that a turning point? Was this when you came out in this respect? To me, that seems huge. It just seems.
Well,
press release
I thought it was kind of big. You know, I wasn't really sure because I'd never done a national press release. And the funny thing is that this happened. Charles Merrill and his partner had one around 2006. And there's even a post somewhere online where it talks about the media being totally silent. I think the media organizations are terrified of discussing tax protests for whatever reason. Maybe because they think they're, you know, supporting breaking the law, or I don't know why. It's not made a bigger issue, but somebody in the higher ups is deciding that all these different stories of tax resistance aren't really being told in the country. And I think mine kind of got the same swept under the table. I mean, I know Howard Dean spoke out about Charles Merrill's tax protest, and the news reports were that the media was silent. He was actually for their protest. So here's the chairman of the Democrats, or the, I'm messing up my words, you know who Howard Dean is.
Yes.
Yeah, he's the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. I could be wrong on these things. Like I said, I'm just, you know, I hate to feel like I'm a spokesperson for all this stuff because my memory's kind of shaky. But he supported a tax protest. Here's a politician who's actually spoke out, and I even have a post about him. Howie, can you hear me? Because
really?
I'm wondering where he went to. You know, he spoke out about it, and then the whole issue was dropped. The morning of my press release, I had one phone call, and it was from a Southern woman who sounded very Christian right, who was concerned that that information was on a Johnson & Johnson webpage. And she kept asking me if I had anything to do with Johnson & Johnson or if they had anything to do with my tax protest, which, you know, it was 8 o'clock in the morning and I was half asleep, so it didn't register until after I hung up. But now I realize I'm almost certain that she was from some right-wing organization, or maybe just herself. She was a Christian right type person, who was thinking in terms of boycotting Johnson & Johnson because, God forbid, they, you know.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like the M.O. of the American Family Association. They're always boycotting somebody.
Well, if you look, about every time I type the word spiritual arrogance on my site, it's a link to the AFA.
I noticed there were
links. I haven't figured out my blog. I actually have some hidden words in my blog that you have to, like, highlight your mouse cursor over to find, and some are links, and so I'm not sure how many people have discovered some of those little treats on my blog. I mean, you know, I got to be a little artistic and have fun with it.
Yeah,
this
it's actually very interesting.
Blog.
I should tell you that we have a caller for you. We have now you're in Washington State, I believe, John, and
yeah.
Our caller is from Oregon, Gene from Oregon. Gene, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Hi. I'm sorry, I forgot your name, sir.
His name is John.
Hi, John. My question was, and maybe you answered this, I have sound on for just a little bit. When you started your tax protest, what kind of reception did you get from the greater tax protest community, if anything?
I haven't heard a lot. I know some gay people in the political organizations say, oh, this isn't the way to go, and we got to stay with the organizations, which, you know, these organizations get a lot of money, and I'm not sure what all that money's paying for, but I would rather see it held in a tax protest. And I know organizations can't officially get behind tax protests, the HRC, or human rights. Yeah.
I was wondering, because usually when you think of tax protests, you think of, at least when I first heard about this, the Iraq War is about the only left-leaning tax protest that I know of, other than until just right when I heard yours. Usually you hear about people that are kind of right-wing and they're doing a tax protest for, like, the Free State Movement or something like that. And I was wondering if any of those, if you'd heard anything from those organizations, if they were saying right on, yeah, or whether they were kind of...
I haven't heard anything from those organizations. I have had a few shout-outs on this one guy's blog. David Gross is a Vortex protester, and he has mentioned my protest. He's about the only one that's actually mentioned it, but he's just into the... I mean, he's written some books. A recent one, I think it's called Vortex Resistance. If you just Google the picket line, mm-hmm. you'll find his site. But has some very fascinating information on the whole history of tax protests in general. I know in this case with gay tax protests, it's a very individual thing, and I'm hearing that it's going to take individuals to challenge the state and the federal laws because the organizations can't do this. They can't do a tax protest because of just the nature, I think, of being an organization. So it's going to get down to individuals going to their country, their government, and saying, I want a really good reason why I don't have this right. And until, you know, you give me this right, or at least a very good reason, I'm going to withhold the tax. So there hasn't been really... Now, I've heard a lot of stories. I've heard hundreds in my lifetime, but especially the past few years and a lot in the past few months. I've heard of many, many, many gay people who feel like I do. The vast majority are terrified. Oh, there's a lot of reasons. And people stay in the closet for a lot of reasons. Job, church, home, family, what have you. And that's the reason why I think a lot of people are not mentioning it. Aside from the fact that when you put yourself out there, you're just saying, come on, IRS, you know, let's fight. You're putting yourself out there. But I know, and I even have talked to some individuals that work with a lot of gay people, like in Seattle, through like therapeutic situations, and they mentioned that they knew a lot of people were doing the same thing. But I think it's a kind of quiet, very silent protest, which unfortunately may not get anything done. But for me, I've had people ask me about this too. I'm not necessarily looking to get a whole group of people to stand in solidarity with me. I think that would be wonderful. But for me, it's just a personal decision. What I've gone through, no way in hell can I submit again and pay into this government that denies me this basic right. Especially at a time where what I'm doing in my own profession and studio, I'm having to basically buy back everything that I spent the past 20 years getting. And to me, it's kind of like, I'm not going to pay taxes on that. This is just, I'm just trying to get my life back to, you know, a fraction of where it was. So it's a very personal decision for me to not pay tax.
Well, as someone who is the recipient of taxes, I'm on Social Security disability, I do support you. I want you to know that because I've hated what this government has done, and I've done what I've done, generally speaking, and that includes gay rights. And I've done what I could as far as protesting and or writing or calling, but since I'm too poor to pay taxes myself right now, that's one thing haven't done yet. So, but you have my support. So,
I was curious. Do you feel like when you protest or write letters, do you feel like that has any effect?
Six one half dozen the other. It's sort of like I haven't protested in quite in maybe a year or so because of in the interest of full disclosure, I work for I volunteer for the Horn, so I don't protest like as much as I used to. I found that when I did the protest, I enjoyed meeting people. It was fine to actually, you know, get involved in the community. Do I think it helped as far as changing any minds on a federal level? To be honest, I have to say no.
In my own kind of evolution, and it was very much inspired by Alexander Haig, who made a comment watching war protesters outside the window. He was quoted as saying, let them march all they want, as long as they pay their taxes. Now, that kind of arrogance was all I needed to hear to realize that waving signs, chanting, phone calls, door-to-door, whatever screaming. I mean, yeah, there is some PR, there is some opening of minds and some education that goes on there. But as far as real change, this is America, and unfortunately, money talks in a huge way. And I feel like the only way to get our government's attention in any way, shape, or form is to do it with our wallets.
Well, I've tried to do bike.
I'm saying this in general too. I'm not saying like specifically for you, but just as a general thing, that's how I feel about the whole idea of protesting.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I understand how you feel because it's very frustrating. What I found kind of. It's a little disappointing on my, like I said, I've done boycotts or, you know, there are some things that I won't buy anymore. I'll either boycott or I'll boycott if I've got the finances. What I find that is kind of sad about that is there isn't a lot of interest in either boycotting or boycotting on the left because basically we're out there too busy putting our nose to the grindstone just to get by.
Go
ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, in today's economy especially, I mean, the reality is, if we're going to be honest here, how many of our nation's citizens claim every dime they make? I know there's a lot. There's a whole underground economy. And if I was struggling with a family, I wouldn't think twice about putting some of that money aside just to get by because the government has kind of created such a mess here. I mean, the last 7 years, it's mind-blowing that we're not talking more about what has gone on in that respect. That's why I kind of feel like I'm ranting about marriage equality, but there are huge issues. I don't want to put a hierarchy here, but it's really hard to ignore what's gone on the past 7.5 years in this country.
But anyway, I'll share your blog with people I know that might be interested in and see if there's anything with that. So good luck.
I appreciate that. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for calling, Steve. And we have another caller for you, John. This is Lee. Lee is on the line. Lee, welcome to Strictly Confidential. You have myself and John on the line.
Hi, John. First, I'd like to say I absolutely respect what you're
doing.
You'll
have to turn the sound down on your computer if you're getting an echo.
I'm sorry?
I was saying if you're getting an echo, you may have to turn the sound down on your computer. Are you okay with that?
Yeah,
everything's
fine.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Hi, I was having a complication with the streaming on my computer.
There you go.
I hear you now.
If you didn't hear that part, I respect you, John, and what you're doing does take a lot of courage. I also really like the terms that both of you were using, the homo-emotional and homo-loving. I think that I am that as well, although I am primarily heterosexual. So those are great terms. But my question is, aside from what you're doing with the tax protest and the impact that that can make, I think that your issue with the Christian right really is a significant point. And I'm wondering how we can provide education, because I think a lot of this issue and the origins of it is the lack of separation between church and state. Here.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering if you have any ideas on what we can do to inundate some of the ignorance and educate people on what this is really about.
That's some great stuff that you're asking. I often use the term theocracy when referring to our government because it seems like a lot of laws, or at least especially the laws against us, are being based on religious concepts. Which, you know, again, is this a theocracy or not? Because I don't want to pay taxes to a theocracy. As far as education, my gosh, it gets down to just, first of all, every gay person, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, needs to be out and open and live without shame. And what I feel like, you know, I'm not into this pride word. For me, and I've done pride different events, I don't know if I feel gay pride as much as I don't feel ashamed. And when I don't feel ashamed, I don't censor anything I do. So if I'm with my partner and I want to play with the back of his hair, you know, with my hand resting on his shoulder, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to have thoughts that go, oh, who am I going to offend? Am I going to get beat up? I'm tired of censoring. So some of it is just being out and visible. Because the truth is, when I was a younger person and went to a gay bar and saw two men dancing for the first time, I thought I saw unicorns juggling. I mean, it was like I saw something that was just, I mean, seriously, it was like I've never seen something like that. I was staring at it. I was kind of like, this is weird. This is kind of, I almost had the ick factor, but I think, and here, I'm gay. I'm a gay man. Just because it's weird and strange and new. So I think people just have to see us out there with our families and our partners. And also, our straight allies have to get a little more comfortable hanging out with us. I have gone out with
How can your allies help you with that? This is my question. I mean, we've come a long way since Stonewall, obviously, but maybe not as far as we think. And I think that you do have a lot of allies in the heterosexual community as well. There are people that are enlightened enough to understand it and not fear it and not be swayed by the propaganda of the what you call the Christian right. How can we, your allies, contribute to the education of people and support your gay tax protest and just the furthering of our society on this issue? What can we do? I mean, we're not gay. We can't go out and be gay, but there are.
Well, you don't have to be gay to be for civil rights. That's the thing. It's almost like when white people were marching with the black people. It's not you don't have to be part of the club to stand up for a bigger issue, which is equal rights. That's the first thing. That's a good question. Being vocal, I mean, I know some straight people that are getting married that are actually making part of their vows mentioning that they hope all humans will have this right to get married. So I think those moments, I mean, what a time to speak up about it. People don't expect that at a wedding ceremony. For one thing, is to make sure if there are gay people in your life, they know you're gay friendly. Now, I don't know how many tricks there are to this, but mentioning a Will and Grace episode or just somehow, you know, having, you know, making comments, because what I find now is, like, now it's a big deal to accuse somebody as being gay, as if that's like calling them a murderer or some horrible criminal. To me, it's like saying you have a blue hat on. Oh, maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe it's a gray hat. That should be as big of a deal as me calling you straight or gay. It should not be this big insult to your... And yet people are still dancing around it. I mean, we've got, you know, there are a lot of people and politicians who are closeted gay. I mean, look at the Larry Craig thing. My goodness. We're still battling that, the number of married.
So you're advocating individual responsibility and just the way we represent ourselves and our opinions in the community.
I think just putting yourself out there as someone who is homo-friendly, who's not afraid to say the word, who maybe mentions gay friends, who maybe brings up the issue of civil rights. Yeah, it doesn't affect you, but maybe it does, because if you were in Washington State, you would have spent over $40,000 just to support me. And you did not have to do that as a taxpayer if I had equality. I would be upset if I was a Washington State taxpayer, you know, because not upset with me. Firstly, I would be upset with the situation, the tax money that could have gone to, you know, a situation that was truly an emergency or a dire situation instead of a totally unnecessary, totally 100% avoidable situation. To me, that's just a misuse of funds. You know, legally. I mean, it's just, I mean, I'm glad I had the help.
I think it's
visibility and speaking out. I'm not sure what else to say on that.
Well, I do have a link to from my blog to your blog. I absolutely respect what you're doing. And I think also your blog, I'd just like to express some appreciation for that. I think that that is a really big step in educating people that might not otherwise have this information or even know that this is happening in this way or that they can do anything about it. And so thank you very much, John, for what you're doing.
Well, if you do anything, go to that first visit. It says, read my story, click here, and I have a welcome visitor page. At the bottom, I mentioned watch the movies Freeheld and Tying the Knot. I just found out today Freeheld is on DVD now. So if you click both of those words, Freeheld or Tying the Knot, I would say those movies are imperative to see for everybody. Not just, I mean, especially for straight people, because you'll see very clearly laid out exactly what happens to people without this right. And you see a human face on it, And it should be enough to motivate you to do a lot. I think just knowing the stories. So that's a big recommendation I would have.
Well, thanks very much, John.
Oh, gosh, thank you for calling. I'm not saying I'm going to burn in hell for you and all
Keep
that.
Up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now.
And Lee, thank you for calling. We appreciate your call. What a great caller. You know, John, you used the word, and it struck me, it's a concept I hadn't really put together in my mind until now, censoring. And I must say that's really a huge part of the gay experience, or it has been, is to live your life not so much worried that people will find out you're gay, but to not offending anyone. It's as if we're put in a position of not upsetting people. And it's a hell of a thing to have to go through.
Seriously, I mean, as someone who has spent a good chunk of my life learning about and devoting my life to early childhood education and children, it's offensive when I realize that some people, especially from Christian Wright again, got to keep bringing them up, look at me, a gay man, teaching young 3- and 4-year-olds and think, oh, my God, you know, lock this guy up. I mean, it's just offensive in so many ways, you know, just for my orientation that would be suspect. But I've even had times where I'm walking hand in hand with my partner and I see young children, and just out of habit, I think, oh, I've got to stop holding his hand. And I no longer do that. Now I'm like, no, we exist. It's again, the act of social aggression, being out and being maybe not proud, but not being ashamed. It's huge. And in doing that, you just let, I think society has a better idea of who is part of society when you see it. We've had this world where we live where people like Larry Craig get married and live this double life. And there's a lot of people living these double lives. I mean, it's not too hard to go online and find married men who are looking for sex. I mean, with the internet age, it's frightening. And if I was a heterosexual woman, I would be scanning my local Craigslist and whatever, you know, websites, because they are out there in droves. And it drives me crazy that this is still existing. It's unfortunate on so many levels. I feel for the man who's maybe closeted and, you know, living that double life and what decisions that led him to do that, be it just totally cluelessness to his orientation, or maybe even more sinister, just trying to, you know, have the wife for the good job and church position. But there's also the other side of the people who marry gays and lesbians who have children and then find out they're gay. I mean, it's just an unfortunate situation, and we really got to make gay not being this horrible thing that drives people to kill themselves or marry the gender they're not even attracted to, just to play it safe and feel safe in the world.
Well said. We had a guest. In fact, we've had her on twice, and she holds an interesting counseling position. She counsels women whose husbands turn out to be gay and have been lying to them for many, many years. It's a very difficult subject. We went into it in great depth, and you're absolutely right. There's a whole lot more of it going around than anyone knows. Now, I've seen, getting to the movies, I've seen Tie the Knot, great flick, but Freeheld I have not seen. So now that I'm aware of it, it's on DVD now. Is Freeheld also about marriage or about the effects of not being able to? Tell us a little about Freeheld.
It's about, I'll just click it right now. It's about two women, Detective Lieutenant Laurel Hester, spent 25 years investigating tough cases. This is in New Jersey. So she's, you know, putting her life on the line to protect society. 25 years. She was diagnosed with terminal cancer. She's trying to transfer her earned pension to her domestic partner. And with less than 6 months to live, remember, she's dying of cancer. She's having to worry if her partner's going to be taken care of. And this is a battle with the freeholders. This is the Ocean County freeholders, I guess, in New Jersey.
Oh. I see.
So,
that's how the title.
And just like tying the knot. I mean, it's interesting that they do find people who have served our country, being, you know, in the military or as police men and women. Of course, every job is important, but I think, especially when somebody's serving their country or society, they should at least have the same rights as everybody else.
Well, John, apparently, according to the press release, you refused to file your taxes as far back as 2005. What happened when you did that and made a statement? Have you been contacted?
Well, I haven't done anything. Stuck? My attitude is I am so, can I say, pissed off?
Sure.
I just did.
The
whole situation. But I I can't even lift a pen or typewriter and talk to them. They haven't found me yet because I've had to move about 8 times in the past 4 years. You know, some of that was homeless and couch surfing and all this other stuff. But unless they've read my press release or come to my blog, they're probably still trying to figure out what happened to me. Maybe they're going to find me sooner now that I'm very much out there. But I have still even, you know, haven't quite decided what I'm going to do, if anything, as far as contacting this government. Because I'm just so fed up. I am just so fed up. And I can't even express, I mean, I'm getting emotional thinking about it. I cannot even express how difficult and emotional I get when I have to deal with any kind of government-related stuff. It just infuriates me. I had jury duty come to me, and I about freaked out. I got a red pen and maybe looked like a, you know, a psychopath writing the letter back, but I just wrote on it in big letters, PTSD, and sent it back, and they never got a hold of me. But I literally could not even lick the envelope and stamp it and send it. I'm just, because, like a lot of people, I see exactly how my lack of legal rights has affected my life. It's not just a theory. It's not just an idea. It's a very visceral experience in my life, losing basically what was the most important things in my life repeatedly. And so for me, it's almost impossible to even have contact with the government without feeling potentially homicidal thoughts. So, yeah, I haven't formally wrote them and said I'm protesting my taxes, but I certainly see. Am.
Well, is this something that we talked about, individual responsibility in stating our case and standing up when slurs are made, that sort of thing? So you're a teacher, and I take it that you work with maybe elementary or junior high, I don't know, but it seems to me that in your job you wouldn't come in contact with very many people you could share this with. So beyond your blog, how do you get this message out? And I'm so glad you joined us tonight. Besides your blog and Strictly Confidential, how do you get this out?
Well, it's largely been, I mean, I had a time when I first moved to this area. I lived out in Maple Falls. I lived in an area where I was afraid to leave my house. It was just not a safe area. So I spent a good amount of time at home on the computer, and then moving back to Bellingham here, I was doing a lot of blogging. I mean, I'm not joking when I said why I blog. I blog to avoid insanity. Literally, that's what the blog was originally. I had to have some way to express my feelings on this in a safe way in my home because I was literally going crazy. Yeah, I'm somebody who wants to be at least moderately aware and informed about the news and about gay rights and especially marriage equality. It's impossible to do that and learn about what people are saying without getting livid. I mean, again, James Dobson, you hear some of the stuff being said by politicians, and I just needed a place to vent. One thing I want to do as a performer, I used to do some performance art. If you can imagine a cross between Laurie Anderson, Frank Zappa, and Bugs Bunny, that's kind of my shtick. Very much animated music and crazy wild and a little thoughtfulness in there, but I think pretty entertaining. Now, I haven't done it for a few years, and I've just now got some of the equipment I need to do it, like the keyboard MIDI file, bass guitar, all this stuff that, thank God, people have bought and let me use, because I'm at the point now where I'm not going to own anything. I mean, some of that's because I don't want anything to be taken away again, and some of it's just I literally cannot own anything again. I don't want to have to go through, maybe this is the PTSD talking, but I just never want to have to experience being desperate and having to sell things that felt like they were my children, you know, and things like instruments. But I do this performance art, and I've been working lately on a piece about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And what I plan to do in town is maybe just start with the open mic thing. This is very low-key. I'm kind of going to be preaching to the choir, I think, at these poetry slam things. But I want to do some of that. This is more for me. I mean, I'm still at the point of a lot of healing. I'm just now starting to work again. I'm really just now starting my life again as far as teaching and being able to earn an income and support myself again. So I'm still doing things very much just for my own sanity, like the blog and working on the performance art. I will probably jump on speaking on any occasion locally. I do want to get more involved that way, but right now I'm just trying to get myself together. And kind of my art, I really do. I mean, my one-man show at the schools was about rhythm and everything, but it was kind of performance arty, and when I say that, I just mean I use theater and my bass and keyboards and music and it's very much a multimedia thing, and I want to kind of do the same shtick, but do it in a gay rights venue, you know, a gay rights performance piece. So that's my immediate plans. I'm definitely going to keep blogging, but I'm sure down the road I will want to, because I'm kind of a performer at heart. I do like public speaking. I feel like I can. I do have a lot to say, and more or less, especially if I'm prepared, can say it halfway well. So I do want to get out there and be a human face for the story, because we need to be out there talking about it. A lot of people go through these experiences, and they're just ashamed. I mean, if I thought about it, I should be ashamed of maybe some of the things that happened, but I'm not. I'm not going to be ashamed for being betrayed or having this person take advantage of me. It is what it is, and I just want people to know that this didn't have to happen.
Well said. There's another aspect to this, and that is domestic violence. We've done some stories. Massachusetts now has a network of places that an LGB individual can go, when you need to just get out of the house. There's so many areas that in terms of relationships were completely overlooked, and it's as if people stick their fingers in their ears and cover their eyes and just say, we don't want to know. It's an amazing blind spot.
Go ahead.
No, I was just indicating it's a major blind spot in society, and it seems to be almost universal from society to society. Nobody wants to acknowledge it.
Sexism, too. I see it as basically sexism, because I had so many people that were like surprised. Wow, I never heard of a man being abused in a relationship. I mean, I was not physically abused, but verbally and control abuse and emotional abuse was very much there. And people just don't expect men to experience that. And I experienced a ton of what I consider sexism, because when all this happened, a lot of people literally were like, well, men just don't go through that kind of thing. They just couldn't wrap their head around. Now, if I would have been a woman, it would have been a very familiar story. Unfortunate, ugly story, but familiar. We have heard of women fleeing their homes for their lives, but we're not used to hearing about, you know, a woman leaving another woman or a man leaving another man for those same reasons. If people would just open up their brain a little bit, they'd realize that our relationships, gay or straight, are not that different. And sometimes we make really bad decisions, and sometimes there is abuse, domestic or emotional or physical or what have you. So to me, it's almost like a sexism. People don't expect men, especially. I think there's this illusion that two gay men are these two guys with great jobs, and they're both just taking in tons of extra money. They have no kids, and so the gay guys don't need, you know, marriage protection. They're doing so well. That's not all of us. Some of us are starving artists. You know.
Exactly. When I began this program, it was. We have a whole lot of straight listeners, in addition to the LGBT group that listens to us, and this particular program, that is. And in the very beginning, it was amazing how many people thought that we were all... People just thought I was really rich, because they just assumed that I lived in a fabulous house with window treatments, you know, but nothing could be further from the truth. And as I began to explain that so many of us drop out of school because of bullying and harassment. Some of us don't even get through college because of our high school or junior high even. So there's a whole other subclass of people who maybe are not educated and who are very, very poor, and they typically work in bars as bartenders and make money under the table. And there's a whole poor group. It really is. There really, really is.
Well, especially again with our, you know, gay divorce welfare program, I mean, I would really like to know the numbers. We never will because of the closet. But I've seen some ugly breakups. I mean, again, nobody has a monopoly on the ugliness of a breakup, heterosexual or gay. And I can just imagine that many have been put in some of these horrible situations and have gone onto welfare because of it, which is just, it's just such, I'm pragmatic in the sense that, I mean, I really think, if all of us had a receipt for the money, when people pay taxes, if they could get a receipt and see exactly where all that money goes, I think people would be astounded, you know, what they're really paying for and how some things are just, it's like the deep, don't ask, don't tell. There's just a ridiculous amount of money being wasted training people to be these Arabic linguist specialists, and then, you know, they see them kissing a guy, and then they, you know, get rid of them, and there goes how many millions? I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense financially. I keep coming back to the money issue because I know a lot of people in America, especially the government, tends to take up, you know, sit up a notice when it's money.
Well, I'm glad you're putting this in that perspective. It had never occurred to me the costs to society, the fact that this should be worked out in a courtroom, and a settlement between a judge and the two parties would divvy up funds to one another until it was. But it just never occurred to me the cost of society of people having to go on welfare and needing food stamps and all the different. And there are a hell of a lot of us where the situation doesn't work out. You have to realize, of course, that, you know, society is not for us. They're mostly against us. And there are a lot of pressures on LGBT couples. And many times, many times, it doesn't work. And so there are
it's
a lot of us that
we
want
to get dressed and walk out of the house considering the lives we, the world we are raised in. Because to be 3 or 4 years old and to find out, wow, the world hates me, I'm evil, that's heavy for a child. I'm very much a child advocate here. So it disturbs me when I think about how children are being raised in this country, some children, to think that. I had a friend in high school that hung himself in a dress, killed himself. We never talked about it, but in retrospect, this person had to have at least some gender identity issues, if not being gay or, you know, I mean, but it was just never talked about. It was just the strange incident where he hung himself in a dress, but nobody, you know, it wasn't touched. The schools, you know, the teachers didn't know how to deal with it, and I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, at the very least, there was a gender identity or a sexual orientation issue going on.
Yes, it's a difficult thing to realize in an early age that you're just not wanted, or even to the point that people, you don't even exist, really. You have no identity in society. We were talking about that earlier, the whole focus on the family rant. Before you came out, I was talking about focus on the family is has linked up with TiVo now to control children's programming, and it's a programming endorsed by Focus on the Family that comes through on something called Kids TiVo. It's a way for parents to turn over the watching responsibility to Focus on the Family. And so you know that there's not going to be good role models. In fact, Focus on the Family is one of the organizations that's behind the reparative therapy and all that kind of. So this message comes through. It's a way of continuing this message that we don't want you. And it just can't go on. It just can't.
I just found my post, What About the Children? And my first line is, I had a friend in high school who committed suicide because it was far too terrifying to grow up in a world where there was no love for him. What about him? Yeah. And I think, and I know what that feeling. I think a lot of gay people know there's that time when you know who you are in relation to society, you've got this label, and you realize that a lot of people want you dead or not around you, and that's a horrible place for a young person to be, especially when you have absolutely nobody to talk to, or at least you don't feel like you have anybody to talk to. That's why we need these gay straight alliances in the high school. I find that fascinating. There are young people today in high school who are gay and lesbian who aren't playing that crap anymore. They're like, look, I'm out. You got to deal with it. And the schools are freaking out. And I love it because there's some very brave young people out there in schools. I mean, I can't imagine being out in my school while I was in high school. I was out to a few friends my senior year, but that's some bravery. And I think it's also interesting because we're talking about kids who may have not even had sex yet. They may not be sexual yet, but they are aware of their sexual orientation. And that's something that just freaks out the right. You know, anybody under 18 to possibly be, you know, think they're homosexual, what's got to be a mistake, you know. They've got to be delusional or need some kind of therapy. Ugh.
Yeah. We had a remarkable guest, a young man. He was only 18. He may have been 17 at the time, but he was a high school student in South Florida who had formed a gay-straight alliance in his school, and it was almost as if he were from another planet than the world I grew up in. So, yes, there's progress, but there's still a war. It's just become less covert. It's moving from psychological warfare, psyops. It's moved from that to more physical confrontation is my take on it.
And that's that pushback, which is going to happen, which is why I think, you know, again, if you're going to be out, you need to be at least cognizant of the fact that there could be somebody who will try to hurt you. That's just the horrible reality of that, of living without shame.
Well, you've certainly given us some wonderful new words and phrases like spiritual arrogance, and that's what I particularly treasure. And
I had some phrases that I Googled because, you know, like in quotes, just to see if anybody else had said it. What was one? I thought I was so original, and I Googled it, and I forgot the term, but I found out somebody else had used it before. but I like the spiritual arrogance because it really is.
Yeah. Was it the term exalted heterosexual couple? Was that the...
Yeah, I like, you know, that's what I feel at the wedding. It's like, I mean, you hear about mothers and, oh, it's the most special day of our life. Oh, it's over. Every little girl just dreams of it. Oh, the planning. Oh, it's so exciting. I mean, why don't heterosexuals get it? They talk about marriage like it's the most important freaking thing of their life. Their whole world revolves around it. Their kids, this is my husband, blah, blah. And yet, why the heck would other people want to have this? They just don't get it. The heterosexism, I mean, that's a concept I don't think people quite realize. The gays have, too. We grow up in this kind of heterosexual model, and we don't, our minds, you know, parents can't even wrap their brains around the fact that maybe their gay kids want to get married also. You know, my own parents, I don't think they, you know, it just wasn't in the cards, so it was never really thought about.
Well, you know, you brushed upon that earlier in the conversation tonight, and I had overlooked it, but it impressed me at the time you said it. That it is an assumption among heterosexuals that there's an awareness that little Johnny or little Mary is never going to get married, and it's just an assumed given, and it's really getting to the point that it's quite ridiculous. And I think you have a good point about withholding taxes, because and if only some of the wealthier ones would get on board, that would be an amazing thing. That would cause, I mean, they can't arrest everybody.
Well, on my Big Money Mo's, I mean, I say not to pester these particular people, but, I mean, David Geffen, Rosie O'Donnell, Anderson Cooper, Ellen DeGeneres, Nathan Lane, Tim Gunn, Gord Vidal, you know, Mary Cheney. I put her in there just out of a joke. you know, David Hyde Pierce, Barney Frank, Melissa Etheridge, Kitty Lane, Billie Jean King. I mean, Susie Orman misfinanced herself. She's upset about the fact that, you know, she can't give estate, you know, rights to her partner. Why aren't people speaking out about it? I just don't. And a lot of times people think you have to speak out about it if you want to get married. I've had some gay male friends that are like, well, I don't, you know, I don't think we should get married. Well, that's fine, but don't you think we should at least have the option, the legal right, that option of getting married? This is why I think some people, even the gay community, can't wrap their brains around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, John, you've been an absolutely wonderful guest. I have really enjoyed having you on the program, and I want you to know that the door is open as this progresses, as things come up. You're more than welcome to join us. You don't have to have a set interview. Just ring us up on the toll-free line, and I'll put you right on, assuming there's not a guest.
I've enjoyed it. I was a little stressed at first, and I thought when you said conversation, I'm like, you know, I don't have to be the expert of every marriage equality and legal matter. I can just say
no,
my
you really
story
don't.
And what I think, and I'm pretty used to doing that, so this is a good time for me, too.
Yeah, we call it conversation radio, actually, because it's about as different from talk radio as it can possibly be and still be on the same planet.
I wasn't even sure, like, your callers. I didn't know if I was going to get the, you know, Christian right crowd calling up and start, you know, doing the issues about the Bible says. Because, I mean, I don't know how to argue with that. There's no, you know, once that word is mentioned, I know that I can't have an intelligent conversation with the person. So that's a whole nother
thing. We keep this a safe place, John. So
yeah.
we would never do that to you. So, in any case, I appreciate your being on the show this evening. Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
You.
And, folks, again, let me give you that website for John. It is gaytaxprotest.blogspot.com. Again, gaytaxprotest.blogspot.com. You can also find links to that by stopping by strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and you'll find there links to John's websites and some extra information for John. And I couldn't be happier to have had him on. I can't remember how I came across John a week or so ago. It was an article I was reading. I go through so many sites during your average day, I couldn't tell you. But when I saw what he was doing, I thought, wow, and called him within minutes. I thought that was a great thing. We have never heard anything from that perspective on the show. tell you what we're going to do. We're almost at the top of the hour, but we do have a couple of minutes, and we're going to take a very short musical break, and it's a little track that's way, way off the standard musical track that we normally take here on the show, so enjoy. Roll it, Bob. Essel, I was listening to that homosexual show on the radio the other night, and be damned if them homosexuals wasn't playing good old Blue Ridge Mountain music. I think it's time for us to get a shotgun. You know, they're coming after us with, was our own music. What a treat that was. Of course, there's a thousand dance. I'll have to play that for you one night. A wonderful dance remix of course, it less the fiddles. But it was a great dance track in the clubs back in when I was DJing. Certainly I could understand John's comments about losing his piano and losing his instruments as if they were his children. It was a total loss. He was devastated. I get that, having been a DJ many hundreds of years ago when the dinosaurs danced. What an emotional attachment we have to our music. And in his case, his music was the instruments. In my case, the music was in the form of 12-inch LPs. But nonetheless, what a nasty thing he went through. And what a great recovery. You have to give that guy credit. He bounces back really, really well. In the chat room, they're talking about Keith Olbermann. I think we have just barely enough time to play this. I want to play this. It's a very short news clip from Fox News, just to share it with you guys if you haven't heard it. Apparently, Olbermann and Rachel Maddow have absolutely ruined NBC and ruined the coverage. Bob, run that. It rolls pretty quick. It's called Fox News.
Tim Graham is the director of media analysis for the Media Research Center. He joins us from D.C. Good morning to you, Tim.
Good morning.
Well, it looks, we have known that this is your business. There is media bias in this nation, and they were perfect examples of how extreme the left has become on NBC, which some have referred to as the National Barack Channel.
Absolutely. I think this is one of those things, the idea to make these guys news anchors, I don't know who came up with this idea. It's sort of like people who believe if you add water, you get sea monkeys. It just doesn't make any sense that you can add water and make an objective news anchor out of people who come on the air and tell the president to shut the hell up.
Right.
Like Olbermann did.
That's exactly what he said. But Tim, is the damage done already? I mean, look, we're almost done with this thing. 50-something days left.
Not only is the damage already done, the damage continues. I mean, not only are they keeping these people on for an hour a night, they're adding this lesbian Air America radio host, Rachel Maddow, on every night. So, I mean, they're really entrenching and solidifying a left-wing agenda on this network.
There you have it. The lesbians. My stars, there's a lesbian. They've hired themselves a lesbian, my God, from Air America. They're ruining the country, I tell you. Ruining the country. What a great week it's been. We missed you, at least I did some during the beginning, but I think I have the evil power supply from hell problem licked here on the computer here at on the dirt road somewhere in the rural south. So I believe next week will be a fairly normal, if we ever approach normal, programming week for Strictly Confidential. So I look forward to joining you next week. No telling what Glenn Rivera has in store for us this coming week. Want to thank the moderators, our chat moderators, who keep our chat room on an even keel. What a wonderful job they do. And our news ninjas, who are in constant pursuit of the truth. And we could not do the show without them. And again, we are listener supported. When you have an opportunity, please stop by headonradionetwork.com and hit the PayPal button. It keeps the utilities paid and the high-speed T1 line hit the studio rolling along and new equipment and Lord knows none of us here at the Head On Radio Network take salary. We do this because we believe firmly in what we're doing, and we all have to have day jobs to keep ourselves rolling along. So nonetheless, if you can help the network stay on by keeping the physicalities of it rolling along, we very much appreciate it. So it's Friday evening. Be sure and join us tomorrow evening. The programming's not over on the Head On Radio Network. Tomorrow evening there's, I believe, Rick Smith starts around 5:30, then Rick Goodner around 7, then Billy Shears with Night Sounds at 9 p.m. Live programming has not ended for the Head On Radio Network for the weekend. So in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.